my good pleasure to have the introduction of Reverend Dar Karsten. We have been working together on evangelism clinics out at St. Mark's Eureka for a number of years now, and Jan, his wife, we know very well also. Both have a real heart for mission, for the lost. He is not only pastor of St. Mark's Eureka, he is also now chairman of the Board of Evangelism Services of the Synod. I noticed also in the introductory screed and bio sketch sent me that at one time, namely back 69 to 72, he served as assistant pastor at St. Martin Lutheran in Clintonville. And for those of you who are knowledgeable about Wisconsin, you know that's only 10 miles west of Navarino, which was formerly called Galesburg, which is a feed mill and a Soo Line intersection with the county trunk. But anyhow, he's been at St. Mark's from 72 to the present, and has experienced the blessing of the Lord in the ministry there, with the congregation growing to some 1,200 members plus at this time. He has served with distinction on the District Board of Missions and Church Extension, the District Board of Evangelism. He has been a leader and frequent speaker for evangelism weekends and workshops and clinics and pastor-elder workshops, Ambassador for Christ weekends, evangelist on campus, things of such nature with evangelism and with the growth of the church. We are also reminded that he is a graduate of this seminary, 1969, and has a family of two sons and a daughter. Would you please welcome Pastor Dar Karsten?
Thank you. It's good to be with you and have opportunity to share something that is very dear and near and dear to my heart: outreach, a concern for the lost, and how we might be effective in reaching the lost with the word that God has given us of His Son, Jesus Christ. As I walked in here today, I was reminded of an event that took place in 1969 when I made the trek down that aisle and up to the front and was handed an envelope as someone read, Darwin Karsten, St. Martin, Clintonville, Wisconsin. And I had this manila envelope and walked on back down the aisle. My wife was sitting in the back, and she was wondering where that was and what it was all about. Met with the district president, and he said, if you want to know where Clintonville is, it's a half hour to 45 minutes from the Packers Stadium in Green Bay. That's how he identified it for us. Then, as time unfolded, we began to look at the documents. And perhaps what I want to share with you is symbolized in the document that I received that day for my call. When I looked through the attendant material, under that section which says Opportunity for Evangelism, the congregation had filled it out and routed it through the district president's office and to the seminary placement committee and all of that. And it said under Opportunity for Evangelism, none. Everyone in the town is churched. Now that was almost 25 years ago. A perception that probably was not that uncommon. I'd like to share with you, under the topic that I'm sure you have seen already in the bulletins, etc., Outreach USA, the challenge for us as pastors, for the congregations that we serve or will serve, and for the training of our church workers, both at seminaries and our teacher training schools and other ministry training opportunities. One of the things that we need to do is see the USA the way it really is today. Perhaps the traditional view was reflected in my call, that the United States is a Christian nation. After all, our history, back to the documents upon which this nation were founded, were all God-centered. Now, we would question perhaps whether they were Christian or not, and we certainly would question whether this being a Christian nation is a proper determination. But we have that kind of view of America. I have to tell you that in the past couple of years, I've had my mind blown as I have encountered various things in my ministry at St. Mark's, as well as my ministry in the Synod through the Board for Evangelism Services. A lot of information that has totally changed the way I look at America and the way I think we as concerned Christian people must also look at the United States. And so I'd like to share with you a new view of the United States and then talk about some strategies that they might indicate and then give you a chance to respond by asking some questions. I'm going to start in a way that people who know me would wonder why I would ever start this way. I'm going to refer to a Synod Convention resolution that was passed in Pittsburgh. Now, if you have any contact at all with district and synodical conventions, you know that many times resolutions are nice things to put on paper and have everyone agree to, but they often aren't implemented. But I think in these two resolutions, one that I want to refer to now and one a little bit later, we have said something very important about our view of the United States and what we need to get to be about in terms of reaching the lost for Jesus Christ. Convention resolution from this past Pittsburgh convention, it's resolution-102, and the title of it is To View the United States as a World Mission Field. And it's based upon a document that was also presented at the convention and accepted as reflective of what our mission is. It's called the Mission Blueprint for the 90s. This is a summary of it. It's much longer than this. Perhaps it's available to you here, or it is available through the Board for Mission Services and other synodical offices at the International Center. But let me just tell you a couple of things that are in this resolution. In the rationale, it says this: the Mission Blueprint for the 90s includes the following statements in the second goal. To view the United States as a world mission field. The centripetal model, a window of opportunity. In the centripetal model, the Lord reverses the flow, pulling hundreds of thousands of people toward the United States. Though millions are unchurched, the United States is on the cutting edge of international mission opportunity. By sharing the gospel with immigrants, the good news reaches their homelands. The key unlocks doors in closed countries. And the final resolve, I won't read any more of it, but the final resolve says that we give thanks to the Lord of the Church for these unique United States mission opportunities. A window of opportunity. The centripetal model. Centripetal model is the opposite of centrifugal, which is scattering things out. The centripetal model draws things in. And that's sort of the touchstone word for that particular goal in the Mission Blueprint for the 90s. Recognizing that the United States is attracting people from all over the world and that a world mission field is right at our doorstep. It incorporates the blueprint and goes beyond it in many of the other thoughts that are in that resolution. Perhaps if we see America as a world mission field, we're seeing it the way God sees it and the way He wants us to see it. A passage kept coming to my mind as I began to think through that whole process this past summer and as our board worked with the Mission Blueprint during the past year. And that passage was Acts 1, verse 8. Jesus, on the Mount of Ascension, says to His disciples, "But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you, and you will be My witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the ends of the earth." And perhaps if you look at all the Great Commission passages with the "go" and with the emphasis on the all nations and all creation, we have to see that it's not a distant factor as much as it was perhaps 50 years ago. That mission field is right now at our doorstep. The lost are coming to us. I have given Professor Kapitsky a copy of some of these statistics. So if you would like a copy, I'm going to be sharing statistical things, and you may want that for future reference. And I've gotten these from various sources. Let me just share some of the statistical things that cause us to view the United States as a world mission field. Refugees from various areas of the world are coming in by the thousands. Immigrants continually causing the United States to look at its quotas and how they're going to deal with that. International students and business people from all over the world in a global economy. All of them coming from foreign countries and residing, at least for a time, in the United States. Immigration accounts for 25% of the growth in America right now, and by the year 2010, they're predicting it will account for 33% of the growth in America. Now just think what that does. What it does to the setting, what it does to the mix, what it does to our culture. Half of these are, during the 90s, will be from Asian countries. More immigrants entered America during the 1980s than during any other decade in U.S. history. 1.5 million immigrants, primarily from Latin America and Asia, enter the United States each year. Canada's situation maybe will help us understand a little bit what's happening. By the year 2000, half of Canada's population will be people of foreign birth. Half of the population of Canada. 50% of the population of California is now Spanish-speaking. Los Angeles is the second largest Mexican city in the world, second only to Mexico City itself. 23 million Hispanics now live in the United States, making the U.S. the third largest Spanish-speaking country in the world. And by 2000, the U.S. will be the second largest Spanish-speaking country in the world, with an estimated 40 million Hispanics. 40% of Chicago is now of foreign birth. 8.5 million of the world's 16 million Jews live in North America. There are more Jews living in New York than in Israel. And only 0.1% believe in Jesus Christ. Now just think of the mission field we're talking about. Right now, present within our borders here in the United States. There are 500,000 foreign students studying in the United States right now. And they bring along their world religions when they come. Islam is the fastest growing religion in North America and in fact throughout the whole world. There are 6 million Muslims now living in America. And I ran across this little statistic I thought was interesting. There are 30 mosques in the state of Ohio and 10 already built in Chicago. And 1 million of those 6 million Muslims are African Americans. And many say that the Muslim field, that Muslims are the mission field of the next century. There are 1 billion Muslims in the world. That means one in every five people on the face of this planet are Muslims. 80,000 Muslims are born daily, 30 million annually. The population doubles for Muslims every 27 years. In November of this past year, under the auspices of the Board for Mission Services and the Board for Evangelism Services, we had a think tank about how we could capitalize on the mission field of Muslims that are now on our doorstep here. It was kind of interesting because the representative from our Board of Evangelism just reported that to us 2 weeks ago, and it was interesting some of the comments she made. The concern about whether the word should get out that the Lutheran Church is targeting Muslims. If you'll remember, a few years ago, there was quite a controversy when the Lutheran Church came out in the news media as having in some way, at least by their interpretation, having targeted the Jews. And they made a big point of how could a German-based origin church that had persecuted the Jews now target them for evangelism. And I was asked by 60 Minutes if they could come to St. Mark's and find out if we were targeting the Jews. And so they sent a film crew, and I'll never forget the strong Jewish name of the woman director of the film crew, who was had animosity in her eyes from the moment she walked in. They filmed my evangelism teaching class, and they were going to put it on 60 Minutes, and it was under the auspices of the Board for Communication Services of Synod. It never was ever broadcast. We never got a real direct answer, but the only thing we could figure out is that they really didn't have a story. Because all I did, and it was fun to watch this lady as she observed and directed the camera crew, all I did during that meeting was say, Jesus was for everyone. And I kept writing that kind of terminology up on the board, and they're filming all of this. But we need to not back off from the mission field that's there. We have to be sensitive. I anticipate, from what I heard from this think tank, that the Muslims will be also in that same kind of category, that if we begin to think in terms of targeting certain people groups, we might be in store for some criticism. But I think we have to ask, was the Lord and his first disciples under criticism? Absolutely. Because they targeted people with the gospel message of Jesus Christ. We can never back off from that. A recent Kiplinger newsletter said this about what's developing in America. For every English-speaking Caucasian in the United States who dies, there is one to take their place from birth or immigration. But for every African-American who dies, there are three to take their place. For each Native American, six. For each Hispanic American, 12. And for every Asian in the United States who dies, there are 12 to take their place. With 100 million Americans unchurched by a recent Gallup poll, it makes the United States the fifth or sixth largest mission field in the world. I never looked at America that way. I had grown up with the traditional view of a Christian nation. Everyone goes to church. And that probably was true when I was born and in the early years of my life, but it is no longer true. How do we view America? What's it going to mean for our ministry planning and our strategies? How great a burden will we bear for the lost who are now at our doorstep? Just a couple of other views of America that need to be noted. I'm not going to expand greatly on these, but just to put this into the picture. We are moving from an agrarian society to an urban society. More and more are living in concentrated areas, and mostly those are in the south and west of our country. That brings about, in the concentration of urbanization, more hopelessness, homelessness, poverty, unemployment, a greater separation between the rich and the poor. The rich tend to be moving to the suburbs, and the poor tend to be concentrating in the central city areas. Another thought, the population is graying. 45% of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod of its membership are over 50 years old. That's 10 years older than the average age of the rest of the U.S. population. The average age expectancy in 1990 was 78. And predictions are by the year 2000, the average age expectancy will be 90. That's 12 years in 10 of increase. Education is declining. Illiteracy is expanding. What's that going to mean for our ministry? Couple that with all the different languages, the non-English speaking people that are coming to our land, and the increasing flow of illiteracy. What's that going to mean about our communication of the gospel to people who don't know Jesus Christ? Our values are becoming more self-centered. That's probably pretty obvious. We know that as a result of sin, but it seems to be on an increasing level. Time is the new currency. People are really concerned about time. How's that going to affect our ministry? Leisure is the most important thing to most people. It's more important than work or the family. And the family itself is being redefined. We no longer trust key institutions. That's an obvious fact. And the local church, the traditional, local, denominational church is on the decline over the average. And we find in America that we believe in ourselves more than we believe in God. We call it humanism. It's infiltrating a lot of our society. We're involved very heavily in our area looking at the issues of the public school. What's going on in the public school? It seems that we as concerned Christians for the spiritual welfare of people must also touch life where they are. And I think we need to get involved in some of the key issues of the day. We have a governmental administration that is now in place that is kicking the props out of all the traditional biblical values that God has established. Homosexuality, abortion, all those things are becoming very prominent and being pushed by the governmental officials. Where does that leave us for ministry? Do we take our stand? Do we really speak out in those issues? Or do we allow people to flounder and be influenced by the media that is all slanted in that direction for the direction and values of their life? Our children are watching television at great amounts of time, and they are getting their values from there. What does all of that mean for ministry? You can look at it pessimistically. You can look at it and say it's overwhelming. You can walk away from it. You can even refute it. But statistics show that those are the trends. And the question that we must keep asking is, how do we minister the love, forgiveness, and salvation of Jesus Christ to people in those diverse situations who are now surrounding us in America? We need to set our priorities and see the opportunity. Another of the Pittsburgh resolutions, Resolution-1-03A, is titled, "To Make Reaching the Lost a Priority for Every Congregation." That's a great resolution. It's one of those that's like motherhood and apple pie in many ways, but it certainly needs to reflect the direction in which we need to be going. Let me read one of the whereases to you. Whereas God is providing the church countless opportunities to share the gospel, over 100 million Americans are unchurched. One-third of all Americans who claim to be Lutheran do not belong to a Lutheran church. Backdoor losses in the LCMS approximate 48,000 yearly. One-half of the estimated 440,000 members of the Synod who move yearly do not request a transfer. 62% of America's unchurched state that they have never been visited or invited to become active in the worship and life of a congregation, and 58% of the unchurched envision joining a church. Resolved that the Synod and Convention assembled encourage every congregation of the Synod to establish the theme of this convention, with great boldness tell everyone what he has done, as their congregation's theme and primary priority during this triennium, through the following seven activities. And then they list seven specific ways to implement that. There's a large growing of a segment of America that I suppose we could also label as another ethnic group, another people group. And I'd like to label them as the uncommitted and indifferent to spiritual matters. Work, leisure, and sports have become their religion. That's also a segment that needs to be reached with the gospel of Jesus Christ. 55% on the average of counties in the United States are unchurched. You heard 62% of American unchurched say that they've never been invited to a Christian church. 58% envision joining a church, and they say all that they need to do that is to be invited and feel welcomed. What does that say about ministry? The other side of the coin is that outreach is seen as a low priority of LCMS members. It's been about 15 years ago, but a survey was taken among Lutheran churches, and I'll never forget it when I first discovered it, and now, of course, it has become even more alive in my thinking. When they asked Lutheran Christians what the church existed for, the number one answer among lay people was to conduct Sunday morning worship services. Now, we know that's not a bad activity, and it certainly is a needed part of the Christian community, but is that what we exist for? That's the kind of situation we're dealing with in our congregations. It's not quite completed yet. There has been a long-term study paid for by AAL among ELCA and LCMS churches. It's called the Church Membership Initiative. And I want to just share a couple of things that have come out as a result of that. I'm involved with the restructuring of Synod that was approved at the Pittsburgh Convention, and so we've had contact in setting our goals and priorities as a Synod with some of the survey results of this Church Membership Initiative. When judicatory leaders, that's the district and national leaders of ELCA and LCMS, were asked, what are the primary causes of the decline in Lutheran baptized membership, and that is on the decline, the number one answer was, from the judicatory leaders, lack of evangelism outreach, lack of concern for the lost, loss of congregational mission drive. And that was answered by 29% of the ELCA judicatory and 52% of the LCMS judicatories. 70% within that same study of LCMS congregations are not motivated to increase their membership. 70% do not want their membership to grow, and they state that in various ways. And the surveyors, Alan Klaus and Cheryl Brown, said that as they visited churches during these past years, they could tell. Now, you can dispute this, but they said they could tell within 5 minutes of visiting the church which ones they were, the 70% or the 30%. When LCMS congregations are asked, what is your primary ministry? 70 to 80% said it was to their own membership. And for those churches, they are the ones who do programs. They are the ones that are getting weaker, and that's statistically. We're not evaluating spiritual here. And their outreach is the last item on the church's agenda. 20 to 30% said that their primary ministry was beyond their own membership. And for these, they are in mission. And it's reflected as you visit the church. It's reflected in the priorities that they set within their budgeting process and within the distribution of time and resources and talent and leadership. They are getting stronger, and outreach is the first item on their agenda. Aside from in regard to that, one of the things that affects me as involved in the Board for Evangelism Services of our Synod, those 20 to 30% of the churches that are in mission, that are getting stronger, that are growing, and that outreach is their priority, very few of them use synodically produced materials. That's fact. You can evaluate that however you want. We in the synodical leadership believe that that says something about what we're doing in terms of enabling, resourcing, and providing materials for ministry. If the churches that are growing are not using what we're producing, somebody better look at something. Like the early church, the LCMS needs a radical new vision, and to use the N word today, a new paradigm. And I'd like to share with you a picture. It was alluded to this morning in the chapel address when the disciples first were called by Jesus to follow him, and he began his ministry with them. They had a vision, and it came up periodically. It came up in the gospel reading in the chapel service this morning that they indicated an understanding that what they were going to be a part of with Jesus was an earthly kingdom. And when the cross intervened, the earthly kingdom idea went out the window. And what happened is that early church, through the appearance of Jesus Christ in the upper room, as the Father has sent me, so I am sending you, as he sent the Holy Spirit to them in a special way on Pentecost, and what response there was out of that recorded in the book of Acts, after the cross intervened, they could no longer go back to the old paradigm of an earthly kingdom. They developed a new paradigm, and that was a co-mission with the Lord Jesus to reach the lost. Now transfer that up into recent history within the LCMS. Between the 50s and the 70s, the LCMS was very much a program-oriented church. And we were successful in, we were blessed in many of the things that we were able to do. The program paradigm now, like the cross intervened with those first disciples, has had the intervention of baby boomers and baby busters and a whole society that's totally different than it was 20, 30 years ago. Now we have on our doorstep a very similar situation to what those early disciples had. Can we change the paradigm? Can we see things differently? Or are we still programmatically oriented? I believe we can't go back to the program. We've got to develop new ways, new paradigms for reaching the lost. And God just keeps dumping them in our lap right here in America. What does all that mean? Let me share with you for a couple of minutes some strategies, some ideas, some encouragement maybe. And then I'll give you a chance to respond. Number one, I'd like to suggest we need to raise the vision of LCMS pastors, congregations, and training institutions. We need to raise the vision of what the ministry really requires now in terms of lostness. That we're not dealing with a church society in America anymore. We're dealing with an unchurched society. And so we've got to raise the vision to help individuals and congregations see the lost and reach them for Jesus Christ. We just developed a new ministry in cooperation with the LWML and the Board for Evangelism Services. It's called Living the Mission. If you have a chance to get involved with that, we just trained leaders for all the districts and have designed the ministry around encouraging people in their own individual lives to live the mission, to do what they can as individuals in their congregational ministry without a structure. What can they do to enhance their congregation's ministry without going through the red tape of a structure? And then on a third level, how can they live the mission in programmatic planning within their congregations? We believe, and have this more and more confirmed as we hear these statistics, that this is a vital and pertinent applicable ministry that needs to be carried out. Raising the vision and enabling people to be about the task of reaching the lost for Jesus Christ with their individual abilities as well as joining together with other Christians and congregations. The programmatic model is that we have encouraged too long that only meaningful ministry is done through the programmatic planning of a congregation. And we're discovering that that's not true. The greatest ministry seems to be being done today by individuals who have a vision for the lost and are living the mission right where they are, in their workplace, in contact with people who have been brought to this land. And that's raising the vision and then implementing a desire to reach the lost for Jesus Christ. Now maybe I should say at this point, we're assuming that we don't win anybody. I didn't feel that I needed to at the seminary, you know, spell out the whole process that it is through word and sacrament and the Spirit works to bring people to Jesus Christ. That's a given. We're talking about that as the instrument through which God does work. But we're here trying to develop an awareness of the world that we seek to convey that message to and how we can do it effectively. No one is going to be won because we identify them as a target group. No one's going to be won because we understand the statistics of what's happening in America. No one's going to be won because we have a great vision for the church or pass resolutions at a convention. People are only going to be won as the means of grace are unleashed in all of their power upon them. But to do that, we've got to look at the method by which that is being done. How do we contact people? What is the means in terms of human elements that we are using to communicate that gospel and unleash that means of grace in the most powerful way? So we need to raise the vision. Number two, we need to be focused and culture specific in our outreach. Now, when I say culture specific, I'm not just talking about ethnic groups. I'm talking about culture specific with white Caucasian people in America that most of our churches are made up from, that are baby boomers and baby busters and coming with all kinds of things that the world has planted into their hearts and lives. So we need to be focused and culture-specific in our outreach. Help Christians understand the world religions. We need to study that. We need to look at that so that people are aware, because they're running in more and more to people from other religious backgrounds. It's amazing how many times I've had people in my congregation in Eureka, Missouri, here in the heartland of America, come to me and say, I'm working with a Muslim. Or I'm working next to someone from another world religion. I never had that before. So we need to help people understand world religions. We need to learn and teach outreach-appropriate languages. I have been pushing for our Christian Day School to teach Spanish. We haven't made that decision yet. But I believe if we're really serious about disciple-making, our churches and schools being disciple-making institutions, that we need to be helping them be able to communicate with the people they're going to run into. I don't know if you realize it, but there's a very large segment of Spanish-speaking people in St. Louis. And we have a ministry under the auspices of the Missouri District, a pastor doing Spanish ministry in St. Louis. So we're not only talking about California, which is that great population of Spanish-speaking people, but it's starting to infiltrate the whole land. We need to plant new churches that are culture-specific. And again, not limited to ethnic groups, but plant new churches that can communicate the gospel message in a way that will touch the hearts of the people where you plant that congregation and among whom they work. Train workers to identify and seek to meet the specific needs that people have today. This does not determine our ministry, but it certainly must shape our ministry. I've run into things in recent years that I never would have thought of, that they never told me about at the seminary, and I don't believe they could have. And I want to share an example of something that just happened in my last adult discipleship class. I have 22 people in that class. The average age is about 25. When I started the class, I knew that three of the couples in there were living together. I invited them to come because I believe the word works. In all three of those couples, one of the couple was not baptized. And I'll just tell you about one of them. They all three are very similar. After the lesson on baptism, when they heard God speak about the importance of baptism and how it could not be minimized, they rushed up to me after class and wanted to be baptized. I said, I need to talk to you. I set up an appointment with them. And I said, I want you to understand what baptism is all about. And I want you to enter into baptism with great integrity. And I said to the one woman, I said, I'm going to be asking you during the baptism these questions. What do you believe? And I was going to give her a chance to confess her faith. And then I was going to say, and then I said to her, I'm going to ask you the question, do you intend with God's help to live a life that is pleasing to Him and in accord with His standards? And I said, now, we need to talk about that. Well, as it unfolded, I baptized her in the morning at the worship service and married her and her now husband that afternoon. But God worked in that situation. I could have said when they started to come to the class, well, we don't allow people here who are not married to come to this class. I probably would have had that kind of a mindset from my upbringing as a lifelong Lutheran. That's the new need that's out there, and there's more and more of that. We cannot lower the standards, but we need to let God's Word change people's hearts. I think we need to train workers to identify and seek to meet those kinds of needs. I'd like to suggest that we train indigenous kinds of workers to reach their own kind. In other words, we've been doing it for years in the mission field, where we've learned that the best way to minister in mission fields is not to have white or different kinds of people come in and carry out that ministry for any length of time, but train indigenous clergy. Why not think in those terms of training indigenous lay people? People who are working in computer laboratories, who are the baby boomer kinds of people, train them to minister where they are. Equip the saints. We give word service to that concept of the ministry, but I'm not sure we give it its full attention as we might. Number three, be willing to change the paradigms when needed and helpful. The baby boomer and buster phenomenon has got to be dealt with. Again, it doesn't dictate our ministry, but it has to be taken into consideration. It has to shape what we do. The faster pace of life. How do you schedule programs at a church when everybody is booked solid? And how do you expect people to come to those programs? It's affecting what we do in the church. We need to go from a program-based ministry to a relationship-based ministry, from an institutional concept of the church to a community concept. What do I mean by that? In an institution, we provide programs. In a community, we provide care. I believe the New Testament church was a community, not an institution. And I believe that what has developed in the history of the church, not only the Lutheran church, but that's where my experience is that we have become a program-based institution. And it's not meeting people's needs for caring and intimacy and concern. We need a community. In that membership initiative study, one of the things they haven't been able to draw a conclusion on, but they have some general concepts that they're working with, is that in the congregations that have begun to grow and have made the priority of outreach their priority, they have discovered that there was an igniter event. That's what they've called it, an igniter event. And there's no common igniter event. They can't find it. But something in the continuing plateau history of that congregation happened, and it changed it from turned in on itself to outreach, and it began to grow and win the lost for Jesus Christ. What's the igniter event? I'd like to suggest that one igniter event could be your installation at one of the churches of the LCMS. And you just think about that one. Number four, see the world mission opportunity in immigrants, foreign students, and other nation business people. Good news needs to be carried to those lands. Many of them are closed to missionary activity. But if they are won for Christ by the power of the Spirit, they will take that to their country, to their relatives, and to many lands that are closed to missionary activity right now. We need to befriend foreign visitors individually and as congregation. Provides things that meet their needs. Maybe a service in their language. Or maybe an English class or tutors that might assist them with their English. Anything to touch them in their need. Did you know that we did a study about 2 years ago of all of our Concordia College campuses? And that there are large percentages of non-Christian and foreign students on our Concordia campuses, and we discovered that most of them were not doing anything intentionally to reach them for Jesus Christ. All they were doing was having them attend classes. An opportunity right within our own school system. Number five, establish mission partnerships with Midwestern churches and urban or coastal mission efforts. What we mean by that is that many of the resources are largely in the Midwest, especially in the LCMS. But the growth of these special kinds of urban ministries and ministries that are ethnically oriented are on the edges of the United States where the growth is taking place. Where the opportunities are the greatest is where the resources are limited. And we need to partner up as Midwestern churches, something you might do when you get into your congregation, to have them expand the vision and look beyond themselves. Number six. Suburban churches can adopt city churches and ministries to offer support, encouragement, and financial and people resources. That's going on in the St. Louis area with suburban churches partnering up with inner city churches. Number seven, consider new models for ministry. I don't have time to really go into this in great extent, but the mega church model is with multiple staff and some culture-specific and specialized ministry opportunities that you can't do with a single staff person congregation, which is most often a pastor. Population concentration and the urbanization process will allow for more and more of these, and we need to be ready to pursue that new model, that paradigm. On the other side, the meta-church model, different than the mega-church, the meta-church model is the new look, the transformed approach to ministry. Its byword or theme is large enough to celebrate, small enough to care. And it's greatly oriented around small groups. These small groups are more lay-centered, needs meeting, more intimacy, and they're more flexible for people to plug into than the programmatic structure of a traditional church. We need to be ready to look at those new models for ministry. In April, we are bringing five different congregations leaders from each district of the LCMS to Chicago for what we're calling Developing Leaders for Mission. We are going to be training them to implement meta-church models in their congregations, and then to be enablers, or what we're calling docents, teachers who then will pass it on, with five other churches in their districts, seeking to challenge congregations to look at the meta-church model for meeting the needs of people today and the unfolding mission field in America. The last one probably touches you most intimately. I think we need to train church leaders for ministry that's there today. I don't know all that's being done here at the seminary or at any of our schools, but I know that when I graduated, there was no sensitivity to being in a team ministry. And if these trends are true at all, we need to be training workers to work as teams. And if you can't work as teams, if you're an independent operator, you're going to be limited in the ministry opportunities that are out there today in America with its expanding mix of people as well as expanding population. Multiple staffs are going to be greater and greater possibilities, and we need to train for that. We need to equip also for leadership beyond theological training. One of my big deficiencies now is that I have been a victim of the Peter principle. I have been pushed to the level of my incompetency. I was trained as a small church pastor. I'm a small church pastor. I like people. I was great when the congregation was small because I was that kind of a person. Now, as the congregation has grown under the blessing of the Lord, when I came to St. Mark's in 1972, we had 100 people. We now have over 1,200. I've been pushed to the level of my incompetency. I have not been trained in leadership and administration skills. I've not been trained in the electronic marvels of the day. I struggle with computers and telemarketing and telecommunications and satellites and all that kind of stuff. And somehow we need to recognize that that's on the horizon and will be a gift from God for us to reach the greatest number of people. And I think we need to train leaders in that vein also. Now, there are many more things we could probably highlight. Those are some that have been on my heart, and my prayer is that as we have shared them, they have challenged you in your future ministries, as well as those you might be involved in now, to see that the United States is a world mission field. Thank you.
Really appreciate your emphasis and questions. We invite anyone. We've got a few minutes, very few, but those of you who have some pressing question, you could use the mics on either side. Please speak into the mic so that it can be recorded.
Thanks for coming. I was just wondering, given your anti-program emphasis in here, do you have an evangelism board? Or is it your thrust a individualized? You're speaking it in your sermons every Sunday to get everybody involved because of the concept that while the board's handling it.
The answer to that question is yes. I did not mean to give the impression that there's no place for program, but we have lived totally on program. And one of the big emphases we have through our outreach ministry is on the individual as a witness for Jesus Christ in their lifestyle, where they are. We conduct training ministries that reflect that, witness workshops. We are now going to be doing the living the mission that I referred to. I didn't mean to indicate that there's no place for program, but I think we have lived too long totally on program. Let me tell you one of the struggles I've had with some of the staff that has come in trained in synodical institutions. Is that we have to talk through and help each other to realize that you don't create ministry by bulletin announcements, bulletin board announcements, and sign-up sheets. It requires personal contact and loving care. And a lot of ministry, I believe, has been done in the past that way, and it worked. But I don't think that works today. So just relying on the program is what I'm really referring to. I know that if I put a sign-up sheet for outreach ministry training, I would get nobody to sign up. When I put a sign-up sheet for my adult class, I get very few people to sign up. But the ones I call are usually there, or the ones I visit are usually there. That's what I'm referring to, that personal ministry. You know, pastors that still make house calls.
You talked about how there's the unchurched that are willing to be churched if they're invited and they have that receptive feeling. And I'm wondering about, well, we want them to receive God's grace in the word and sacrament ministry and feel that care of the church community. Yet I don't believe if you ask those people, do they want to be involved in word and sacrament, that they say, oh, that's what I need. So putting the worst label on this, is this kind of a bait and switch, or how do we work that around?
I don't see it as a bait and switch. People are looking for care, and we care because of the gospel. And so ours is a gospel-motivated care. I don't think that's a bait and switch. People want to know that they're welcomed and they care. To me, that's intimately gospel-motivated. And so we're not switching anything, but we're operating from a base of care. Let me tell you, the people holed up in Waco, Texas, the people who become part of cults, who are being converted to Muslim as the fastest growing religion in America, are initially going into those because they are being contacted, invited, and they believe cared for. Now, what does that mean? Do we say, well, we don't want to be thrown into the same package as those false religions and all that kind of thing? Or do we say that that's the human situation? I think Jesus was that way. He looked at the human situation and he capitalized on the person's need and then led them to Jesus Christ. Think of the miracles of Jesus when he healed someone and then immediately followed it up by saying, your sins are forgiven, or in the context of the healing. That's not bait and switch. It's a caring for all that's going on in that person's life, and that's what I would see as what's going on there. Now, that's a Gallup poll, by the way, that said that. It had nothing to do. It's not a church-related poll. A Gallup poll asked non-Christians if they would be open to a church, and 58% said they would, 62% said that they'd never ever been invited. And I think that's why the cults are growing too. I mean, I don't think it's just the Christian church that they're talking about, but any religious care expression, then they're willing to respond to that. And we better be out there with the gospel.
I appreciate your presentation and your comments and your concern. One of the institutions our church has are the numerous grade schools and preschools we have. And they can either be a great source for outreach or a tool that is left laying aside. What is the Board for Evangelism Services doing to encourage people to use these institutions or these caring units that we have? And what can we as future pastors do as we look at the schools that we're blessed with instead of burdened with?
Glad you asked. Working with the Board for Parish Services 2 years ago, we developed a program called Vision for Witness. Anybody seen that? Vision for Witness? That videotape series was designed specifically to help teachers in our day schools and high schools, but day schools primarily, to take the opportunity to make disciples with the children and the families that have visited them. By the way, 10% of children attending Lutheran day schools, grade schools, are unchurched in America. 10%. That's the overall statistic. And like some 35% are non-Lutheran. They're from other Christian churches. So right there we have people being brought to our Christian day schools. We started our Christian day school at St. Mark's in 1980. and we designed it as a mission outreach for the community. We can point right now to about 140 people who are members of our congregation as a direct result of their initial contact with our Christian Day School. And we have an intentional plan for ministering to them beyond just educating their children in a safe atmosphere during the days of the school year. Yeah, absolutely. Great opportunity for us. Wynn Arnn, of church growth fame, some of you may know of him, said that that's one of the greatest assets the LCMS has is its education ministry if we mobilize it for reaching the lost.
Well, thank you again, Dar. And any of you that have following questions, you'd like to pursue him over to lunch in Lober or in Wartburg, why, we'll do that. Let's thank him again. And also, the tape will be available and the outline will be available so you can spread the word. Anyone wanting copies will have them.